Leaders for Nopdorp, sitting alongside Stefan Biankowski and Jonathan Harding for this week's edition of the Tribuna Weekly. And if you look at the Bundesliga table right now, you see, of course, Bayern Munich sitting at the top of the table on 24 points. But who's that next to them? Is that lawn ball Leipzig on the same amount of points? So only goal difference is separating Bayern and Leipzig right now. Of course, Leipzig played Mainz over the weekend. They had the luxury of seeing that Bayern dropped points in order before their game on Sunday. But John, I didn't get to see too much of that game, but when I saw them, they were electric against Mainz. What did you think of their performance, and how do you think they've done this season?
Yeah, once again, impressed. We've said it a number of times about Leipzig and their performances. I think what's surprising most people is the consistency and the fact that every weekend people are perhaps preempting a defeat or preempting the end of this run. And what often happens with sides like Leipzig, who come under pressure to keep delivering, is that they eventually buckle. Except this team shows no signs of doing that. And that's perhaps exciting on the one hand and daunting on the other. Of course, it's a team that divides opinion in the Bundesliga, of course, but I think we can all agree that the way that they play football is very exciting. It's fun to watch, and they deserve to be where they are. They were electric. You're right, and I think that's exactly the way that Hasenhüttl wants his sides to play football. We saw that with Ingolstadt. We saw that with Ingolstadt this season because they didn't have it, and they didn't have Hasenhüttl. And it's quite interesting to see the impact that a coach can have in such a short amount of time. He's done an amazing amount of work. Timo Werner, for me, has to be one of the players that we talk about. I'm sure we will at length later on. But given the situation and the pressure he was under at Stuttgart, a lot of people said he wasn't really performing. He had a real dip in form. He's moved clubs at exactly the right time to the right club with the right manager and the right development. And wow. Mm-hmm. He's playing really, really well. Even if he wasn't scoring and assisting as regularly as he is, I would still say, you know, look at this kid. He's coming a long way. And very, very exciting for Germany all of a sudden. A country that had no striking options in the last few weeks. This league has suddenly given them a plethora of choices. But yeah, Leipzig in second. Wow. It's, you know, everybody's looking at the game against Bayern now. You know, I talked about it on Twitter with a few people the other day. Bayern and Dortmund are still the two biggest teams in the league. There's no doubt about that. But the biggest game of the season now is definitely Bayern Leipzig.
It's a mid-Wednesday game too. So it's the Wednesday before Christmas. So Wednesday mark it night. On your calendars that Wednesday that's night. The day where Leipzig travels to Munich. Stefan, you've obviously been a huge fan of Timo Werner, even when he was at Stuttgart. What have you seen this season now that that is different from last season with Stuttgart?
Yeah, I remember speaking to him last season actually at Stuttgart, and I was asking him, you know, what position do you think you play? And he was like, I'm a striker, no doubt about it. And I remember interviewing thinking, you're not really, I mean, you're a winger, let's be honest. You don't score as many goals, you can't finish. You can take on players, but you can't finish. Now, obviously, I never said that to him, but like, that's
really?
that's the kind of impression people had of him last season. At least I think so.
Definitely,
because that's where he tended to play for Stuttgart. Sometimes he played up front when he had to, but he was considered a winger. And this season, I think one of the main points, two main points. I think the first one is that there's no pressure on him like there was at Stuttgart. At Stuttgart, he was the guy that had to, you know, he was the match winner for him. I know they had players like Kostic, for example. Who also could do a bit of magic, but this Leipzig team is just, you know, full of so much attacking potential, and it's crazy how they can just bring, like, for example, yesterday they brought Selke and Burke on for, you know, Yusuf Poulsen, for Forsberg, for even like Naby Keita, who's technically a midfielder, but he likes to get forward.
And they're all 21 and younger, right?
I think so. Keita might be the oldest at 25, maybe. Well, Poulsen's 25 or something.
It's crazy, though.
Well, it's interesting what he's doing, too, because Naby Keita actually, I think, was an attacking midfielder. He came in as an attacking midfielder, but he's playing basically as an eight.
Yeah.
That is coaching. I mean, the players that are on the field right now, with Comper and with Orban and with El Sanker and all of these players that were in the second division. These are all second division players. A lot of them are second division players that have no Bundesliga experience.
Yeah, but importantly, there's so many of them that there's no solitary person who's charged with scoring the goals. Like, Poulsen's technically the striker, but he's usually the one who's playing target man and bringing our players into the game. So there's that. There's the fact that he hasn't got the pressure to score goals, which I think is obvious from how how free he's playing.
Mm.
And I think the second thing we have to consider as well is that I don't think he's got any more clinical than he was at Stuttgart. He still does miss chances. It's just that he gets so many chances.
Mm.
For example, his second goal last night against Mainz was just Forsberg passing the ball to him in the middle of the box. You can't miss that. So he's getting so many more chances. So I don't think his conversion rate is probably any better than it was at Stuttgart last season. He's just been given more chances.
Well, I also think his confidence has something to play with. About the fact that he left Stuttgart, but bereft of confidence, and he was in a struggling team, and he was trying to carry the hopes of that team. You know, it's tough on him. But I think in this team, as you say, lots of different outlets for them, and now he doesn't feel under pressure. And I think that will probably be on. There's no reason why he can't score 15 this season.
Yeah, and he's got that same talent that he's playing like the kind of player I think Löw wants Götze to play like for the national team.
Mm.
You know, that kind of tricky number nine who can dribble it wide when he has to, or he can skip high players.
Well, I think more importantly, even playing off somebody.
Yeah.
You know, like I think that we talked about how he was at Stuttgart.
Mm.
He was up there by himself in Stuttgart, and that's why you see that Hasenhüttl is keeping Poulsen in the game, even though Poulsen is probably not people's idea of a first choice striker. But what Poulsen does is he allows Timo Werner to get on those, and it's almost as if like a lot of the chances that Werner gets is because Poulsen is on the field.
Yeah, and it's just a wide array of talent, to be honest with you. I mean, like you mentioned Keita there, like the way that he plays is that number eight role, like further back. He's so cool on the ball, you know. He's so relaxed in possession. And Poulsen's the exact same. I know. I keep calling him a target man, but he's so good in the ball, so good at dribbling with the ball. And if things aren't working, they've got a whole array of strikers they can bring on in Selke and in Oliver Burke, who both haven't really done as well as Werner or Forsberg, for example. But you know, these are guys who can obviously do. I don't think obviously Burke hasn't proven himself anywhere near as much as the other guys, but these are talented guys. I mean, Burke comes on and he plays. Last night on Twitter, actually, I used a Futurama quote from Zap Brannigan. He was like, he looks like a steakhouse, but he handles like a bistro. In the sense that, you know, like, he's this absolute monster. He's knocking defenders over, but he can turn on a sixpence, you know? So he didn't really do anything particular, Burke, but he still knocked over a few defenders, you know? So these guys are useful to bring on, even if they're not.
It's just intimidating as well.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're 2-0 up and you know, bring on that kind of beast on the wing, even if he just gallops down and delivers a couple of dangerous crosses, you're thinking, goodness me, we've been dealing with, you know, Timo Werner or Poulsen or Forsberg running around for the last 60 minutes dribbling around us, giving us headaches. And now we've got some beast running down the wing, you know. But variety and options, I think that's something that a lot of other squads don't have. And I don't want to make comparisons, but, you know, when you look at other teams who are trying to talk about having attacking talent in that sense, you know, Dortmund have a lot of the same type of player.
Mm.
You know, I don't feel like they have a beast to bring on. Not that every team needs one, I'm just saying, in terms of variety.
Well, we made that, I think, point that earlier in the year that Dortmund didn't have like a match winner that they could bring off the field. And even though maybe Oliver Burke is not a match winner now, I mean, Hasenhüttl is almost turning him into one.
Well, I mean, the fact that he didn't have any defensive, you know, what was it, anything else, hard drive, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it looks like he's improving gradually. And imagine that kind of player getting a defensive mindset who's capable of running back and being talented on the wing. You know, that's very exciting.
There's also the fact that this team are just playing with absolutely no pressure, right?
Yeah, that makes such a difference.
I mean, I did a piece for Deutsche Welle with our colleague Matt Pearson about comparing Bayern and Leipzig, and you know who's more self to win the title. Obviously, Bayern are when you look at it on paper. But I think a huge factor that people aren't considering right now with Leipzig, or maybe they are, is the fact that they're just playing with absolute freedom.
Well, I think you said it a few weeks ago. You said it perfectly. If they finished,
thanks, Davis.
Yeah, if they finished mid-table.
Yeah.
If they went on a 5-game losing streak.
No one, everyone would be like, oh, it's over. Oh,
it's over. Okay, what a shame.
But
Bayern, they had a run, and
exactly.
They're going to survive.
And if Bayern go on a 5-game losing streak,
it's the end of the world.
It's the end of the world, exactly. And I think that's what makes it so interesting. You know, nobody wants to talk about. That's what I find a bit strange. I think Ross tweeted saying RIP Bundesliga, and I was a bit surprised about that. Because,
yeah, I responded to it straight
because
away.
Because I thought it was, you know, like, we've been calling, I guess, for more competitiveness in this league. And as much as we have all been supporters of the Bundesliga in the last few years and said, you know, look away from the title race, look how exciting the Europa League race is or the Champions League race is. And that's been true. But it's very hard to sell something internationally unless there's competition at the top, you know, and it's hard to sell a league like that. So
it's the best. Yeah, sorry.
As much as you don't like, or you might not like, the Leipzig model or the approach, the fact that the Bundesliga table at the moment reads 24-24-20-20 is, for me, points-wise, is very exciting.
Before you even get to Dortmund.
Before you even get to Dortmund, it's very exciting.
Well, to me, I think the bigger thing is I don't actually give Leipzig's model the credit for how well they're doing. I think the fact that Hasenhüttl is there, and Hasenhüttl has gotten the best out of all of these players, and the fact that he's motivated them to have this fearlessness, to have this, like, this drive to just go at teams, whether it's pressing, whether it's just fantastic one. I mean, they're playing one-touch football, like a Premier League team that has been playing with each other for ages.
Yeah.
But they're like a recently promoted side, and some of the players like just met like a few months ago, and they're playing like an unbelievable football, and that is all down to Hasenhüttl, and I think that's why that they're at their place, not this whole model that they have. I mean, maybe they use that to develop so quickly, but they're at their place right now, I think, and I think that's Hasenhüttl's credit.
One of the things I wrote about was that actually Hasenhüttl, the coach himself, he's actually got a lot of similarities to Leipzig in the sense that he's a really... I mean, actually, he's got a lot of similarities to maybe Timo Werner. He was playing, he's coaching a team in the lower half of the Bundesliga last season, and he was clearly too good for them.
Actually, no, actually, Ingolstadt was eighth. They're in the lower half of the Bundesliga now.
My apologies.
But to his credit, anyways, keep going.
The point I was making was that, like Werner, I guess, he's playing or coaching a team that he's much better than. And like Leipzig, I get the impression that he feels he has a point to prove. He's a coach who hasn't really been on the Bundesliga scene for so long. He feels he can do... He feels he is better than what he was doing last season. So, like Leipzig themselves, I think Hasenhüttl probably feels he has a point to prove, and he is doing that.
He's proving it, absolutely. Maybe even in the headlines that we've lost sight of that. Headlines about Julian Nagelsmann and his achievements. Maybe we've lost sight of how well Ralf Hasenhüttl is doing. Because, quite frankly, yes, it's amazing that a 29-year-old is doing so well as a head coach of a Bundesliga team. And I don't want to take away from what he's achieved. But just because Ralf Hasenhüttl is a little bit older and was here last year,
and he's still pretty young, I think he's 43 years old,
shouldn't take away from the fact that what he's done, as you say, you know, it's definitely down to his coaching. I think what people have a bigger problem with is the approach, you know, that they're only, what, like 7-8 years old. So I think that's the problem that people have. And I can understand to a certain extent that, you know, that's frustrating financially wise and all of those things, but when you look at their summer recruitment, other than Papadopoulos, I don't think they signed a player older than 21.
Well, let me ask you this question.
I think they went out on a limb, and not went out on a limb, but I think they came out and said, we don't really want to buy anyone older than 23.
Mm. Yeah.
And for a club with that much money and that much sort of, you know, planning in place and set up, and that's obviously where Ralf Rangnick deserves a lot of praise, because he obviously had game
for... Ralf Rangnick is the man behind the curtain here.
Well, let me ask you this question, because I think there's been this discussion on Twitter about... I mean, they're a recently promoted side. The last promoted side to do this well was Kaiserslautern, which, of course, John is very fond of. But people are not treating them, obviously, as a promoted side. So if they do win the title, should we treat it as surprising? Should we treat it... How should we treat it? Because it seems like people are giving them an... basically saying, oh, it's no big deal because they have all of these resources. But at the same time, they're a recently promoted side in their first year, a lot of players playing in their first year, that are at the top of the table. So how are we supposed to treat this team?
Part of me feels like it would be a bit like the election, you know. If Clinton wins, everyone will say... No, everyone will say, oh, there won't be celebrations. It will just be...
Thank God.
Thank God. You know, and part of me... And I feel like that might be the case, you know. If Bayern win, everyone will be like... Oh, thank God.
Yeah.
But if Leipzig win, everyone would be like, whoa, 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 what's happened? What have we allowed? And I don't want to make any... I'm obviously not making any serious...
Leipzig is not...
Donald Trump.
Trump.
Not making any serious comparisons here. But
some
I'm just
people
saying,
on Twitter would have you thinking they might be.
But anyways, keep going.
I'm just saying, in terms of a response, it would be interesting, because I think people would maybe not act as surprised... I don't know. It's difficult.
That's the thing. I don't know.
People would be surprised, but I think people would too quickly jump at the easy rhetoric and say, "Hey, look, you know, it's because of this, this, and this." And I think it's easy to say that. And whether you like it or not, if they do it, and it's, you know, we're 10 games in, I don't want to make any premature suggestions here, but the way they're playing, And the basic fact that, as Steph said earlier, they're under no pressure.
Mm.
And that really, you shouldn't forget that, because in football it's just a case, pressure is so intense for managers, for players, week in, week out. But for this team, like we said, if they lose three games, it's like, oh, okay, finishing the top 10 is still an amazing achievement. But
and I want to get this quick question from Vikings Jazz fan on Twitter, who thanks for asking us a question. He says, does not having Europe give the Rasenballsport a chance against Bayern for this title? Do you think that, how much of a factor do you think that plays in? And not only that, but there's actually not a lot of, there are a decent amount of players that are playing in the international break from Leipzig, but not as many as you would think. So do you think that having those extra matches that off and having those weeks, do you think that's going to help them stay at the top of the table? Or do you think it's this is something just beyond just the fixture list?
No, I think that makes a huge part of whether or not they do well this season. We saw, I mean, the team they played on Sunday, a good example of that, were in Mainz, who look absolutely dejected from an absolute hiding from Anderlecht in his Europa League. Schalke started off really slowly on Sunday as well. Weinstein came out afterwards and said, we looked exhausted from the Europa League, but then we kind of got into our gear. And we've seen Dortmund through the years under Klopp. Every time they play in the EU Champions League, they drop points. I think the only team in the group, in the Bundesliga, who can, the only squad who maybe consistently over the last couple of years who seemed properly adept at being able to do, you know, fight on both fronts, are Bayern Munich, maybe.
Yeah.
And I think to kind of add to what John just said there, I think in terms of whether this Leipzig squad deserved the credit if they did win the league, I think the excellence of Heisenhüttl has completely covered up the fact that this squad itself shouldn't be winning the Bundesliga. They've got a lot of young players, a lot of exciting players, but in terms of actually like A to Z, if you look at their squad, I don't think it's any better than Dortmund's. It's not, in fact, I don't think it's anywhere near as good as Dortmund's. I don't think it's probably...
On paper, you're saying,
probably not better than Schalke. It's probably not as good as Leverkusen's on paper, and it's nowhere near as good as Bayern, like man for man. So,
but you're talking about... And that's true. I totally agree. It's a case now of saying then that this a team will win the title. And it's based on A, excellent coaching, but also B, an intense sense of unity in this squad, which has come together and said, right, we believe in what we're doing here. We might not be worth 15 million, we might not have played 50 Champions League games, but we're good enough.
Yeah.
And they continue to prove that.
Quick question. I've been thinking this the last few weeks. Do you think that Hasenhüttl is going to be hard to hold on to if you're Leipzig?
Hey, if they win the league, then, you know, he's probably going to want to stick around and play Champions League with them. Mm. But it will be very interesting to see what they do, because if they win the league...
Not just him, the players as well.
It will be very interesting to see what they do, because as Steph rightly says, that squad is not good enough to be winning the league, really, when you look at the squads on paper, like Bayern and Leverkusen and Dortmund and everybody.
Because, I mean, if you're a team like Arsenal and you're trying to find a...
Yeah, absolutely. But I would say he's going to want to probably stick around... to have an experience with Leipzig in the Champions League, because I think quite realistically at this rate they're going to be in the Champions League.
Oh, for sure. I think that honestly that's a baseline right now.
It's 10 games. I wouldn't go so far. There's a lot that could happen. They could get some serious injuries. A lot can change. But I would say that they're, even if they will never admit it, and they won't, their expectation now has probably gone from survival to from mid-table to Europe.
What do you think, Stefan?
Yeah, I think it's a really good question, because if they do, even if they only finish top six or top four,
But
if they only finish top four.
No, if Timo Werner just does go on to score 20, 25 goals this season, it'll be interesting to see if they can hold on to their key players. And
whether they buy any.
Sure.
Because, I mean, Champions League, are they going to go out and spend 100 million, 200 million?
It depends whether they... I mean, we have no idea how much money they have in the bank.
No, but that would then go against completely everything that they have then... Yeah. Designed here, you know.
No, exactly. But the point I was going to make is that I'd like to see the comparisons to how Dortmund have tried to hold on to players last time. Because any time Dortmund get anywhere near looking like they're going to challenge Bayern, they struggle to hold on to their key players.
Yeah.
And if this Leipzig team gets torn apart next summer, then I think the wind will very quickly be taken from their sails. So I think I have no idea.
There's a lot of factors that we don't know. I mean, I think you bring up Dortmund, and I think a lot of those were contract issues too.
Mm.
Maybe Leipzig, with their resources, they don't have those contract disputes. They say
it comes down to the player. I think at the end of the day, I'm speaking to, like, I get the impression that footballers, if the potential to play, so your sporting perspectives are in place, and the money is right, in most cases you're going to sign a contract extension, right?
Yep.
So I can't imagine that any Leipzig player would ever be concerned about a financial state, the financial state of their contract or a contract extension. So it has to come down to, are the sporting conditions right? That means, is the coach right at the moment, 100%? Yes. B, in the future, am I playing top level football, which means Champions League or European football or Europa League, right? So if they qualify, then yes. And all of these players are exactly at the right moment in their career, which is clever because they're all 21.
Yeah.
They're all in the upward curve. Say they finish in the top four this year, they're in the Champions League next year. They're 22, 23. They're playing top level football domestically. They're earning top dollar. There's no reason for them to move. And unless, of course, then you have the wind out of their sails effect where maybe they lose a couple of players because they drop down, they struggle. Mm-hmm. And then a club like Madrid or, I don't know, who knows, Arsenal, Man United comes in and says, we want you. Then the prestige of the club. Maybe that's the only factor that Leipzig cannot buy because they haven't got any prestige because they're 5 minutes old. So
that's exactly the point I was about to make, John. And,
sorry.
And the only thing I'd add to it is that the problem that Dortmund have is that they sign... Their transfer policy is not too dissimilar. I mean, if you look at the players that they signed this summer, it's not same age range, same talent-wise in terms of Leipzig. The problem that Dortmund have is that they have players that, for example, Gundogan or Hummels, when they come of age and they become these world-class stars, they start thinking, right, I want to win a Bundesliga title, I want to win a Champions League. Then they decide, I'm going to Manchester City, I'm going to Barcelona, whatever. Leipzig, as you say, have been quite smart and they've signed players 21, 22, so they don't have to worry about that right now, but maybe in 4 or 5 years when Timo Werner's, you know, thinking after 20, 30 caps for Germany, and he's thinking, I want to win a Champions League or something, that's when they start to worry, I think.
But that's when Ralf Rangnick probably has his grand plan in place and they've already signed the next best thing who's 18 years old, right? And that's where the club keeps rolling.
Yeah. So go ahead.
Before we go on, I think that something I want to point out that I only really noticed recently that no one else was really mentioned yet. We go on about the attacking side of this team. It's also worth noting the defence has only conceded one more goal than Bayern Munich.
Yeah. And that's also down to Hasenthal.
It's as good as Cologne.
Everybody talks about Cologne being the defensive wall of the league. So. Yeah.
And they've scored more goals and conceded less than Hoffenheim, who is a team we're about to go on to, I'm sure. Who, you know, right now are the gold. Julian Nagelsmann's the golden boy. Mm-hmm. Spent a lot more money than Hoffenheim. I'm sure listeners are screaming at their phones right now. But I think that's worth noting. No one talks about a defence. Yeah. And if anyone can remember back to the previews, I said I was worried about a defence, but they've proven me wrong so far.
Yeah, but we talked. You mentioned it there. You know, those players, Orban, Compe,
I talked
about it before. It was terrible at Hoffman. But even the fact that they lost Klostermann to injury, who was excellent at the Olympics, and everyone was like, oh, that's going to be a loss. Mm. It doesn't even look like that's affected.
No.
That's real credit to coaching again, but it's real credit to the unity in the group because it's very much like a German team, and it was a bit like, you know, at the World Cup, Germany lost a player in the final. Christoph Kramer comes in, the system still works.
Only for a while, though, Christoph.
And then Christoph Kramer comes out because he doesn't remember where he is, but the system still works, you know, like it still moves. And I think that's what's happening here. They've created a system that, independent of the pieces that are in place, still moves. Huge credit to getting basically what is a mediocre second division defence performing that well. And it's not only that they aren't conceding. It's that they're not even allowing other teams to have that many chances. Like, when you watch a Leipzig game, if you haven't watched one, watch how few chances the opposition actually gets.
Mm-hmm. One word answer on this next question. This is from Phil M. Quinn on Twitter. He says, can Leipzig really win this?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, why not?
I think
yes. That's definitely why not? That's definitely three words.
Can they? Of course, I think they can.
Yeah, yeah.
I think is the key word.
You make a good politician / lawyer, David.
Exactly. So let's So like you said, let's move on to Hoffenheim because obviously that's where the golden boy is apparently in the Bundesliga. The 29-year-old Hoffenheim went to Munich for the first time and got a result, which also Cologne did before them, of course. But I think that the way that Hoffenheim won, like you said, limiting the chances and making Bayern's midfield buildup almost non-existent, he is known for being a notebook manager notebook coach, I should say. And I mean, the way that he was set up to perfection. It was a way that maybe Pep Guardiola would set up his team, but I mean, they were not allowing any chances to get it through from Bayern.
I think I was most impressed with the fact that Hoffenheim were brave. You know, most sides that go to Munich are not brave. And I think in the first 45 minutes, in the second half, almost hits the post, Müller just misses a 100% chance that you just can't believe, but you just think it's exactly like him at the moment. But you know, you need that slice of
luck. Expression you said afterwards, I've got shit in my shoe.
Yeah, he's like, when you've got shit in your shoe, you've got shit in your shoe, yeah. you can't snake it off. And I think that's exactly what he's feeling at the moment.
Courage was, I think, is...
But courage is exactly it. You know, not enough sides go to Munich and show that. We've talked about it in the last 3 or 4 years, you know, like seasons upon seasons where teams just go to the Allianz Arena and they already look beaten before the ball starts. Look at Werder Bremen on the opening night.
Yeah.
Okay, it's a club in mess. It was a club at the time that was in a big mess and Viktor Skripnik and all of that. But there was nothing on that night that suggested to me that they were confident or had any courage about them. And yet, Julian Nagelsmann here has gone in and just done, you know, a superb job. And yeah, okay, he said at the end, I'm pretty happy with the point. You know, in the second half, they probably deserved to win it based on the way that they played. And there was a spell at the end where it was like, oh, here comes the inevitable Bayern goal.
Yeah.
But they didn't get it.
And he did, I mean, he did shut up shop too. And I think, obviously, but I think he knew, I like Peter Stöger before him, he knew when that was,
he knew the time was right. I mean, you know, Peter Stöger would probably argue that Simon Soller, if he was a better player, that they would be walking away with 3 points in that game. But
yeah.
But I think it's impressive that he decided to be aggressive, go for it, and then recognise when he needed to step back. Because actually, a lot of managers probably get that wrong and go be aggressive for too long, get exposed, and Bayern score 5 goals.
Yeah.
Or they're not aggressive enough and they just set up shop and, you know, play with 5 defenders from the start.
Yeah.
What's interesting is Ross pointed this out. We were talking about it earlier. But he had an interview, Nagelsmann had an interview with Frankfurter Allgemeine this week, and he was talking about tackling, and I'm just absolutely fascinated. And there was one question that he answered.
Hashtag defending with Harding.
Defending with Harding, absolutely. Yeah. And it's interesting from a perspective of someone who, like, you know, I enjoy making tackles more, like, as much as strikers probably enjoy scoring goals, because I can't do the second bit. So he says that in every tackle, there's a certain element of uncertainty, and the ball can go anywhere. It can come off the foot. It can, you know, the referee can decide a different way. It can go one way or the other. And that's why he prefers his players not to dive into tackles, but to win the ball and to transition very quickly, to put pressure on the opposition and to create a situation where they can basically turn from a defensive set into an offensive set very, very quickly. And that's not groundbreaking, but the fact that a manager would come out and say, I don't really want my players tackling because there's too much chance. It's very interesting because he's obviously set his team up so systematically that he wants players to intercept the ball or win the ball in a standing position so that the speed of attack is sped up. I think he even says in the interview, when they scored against Schalke, there were 13 seconds. Yeah, 13 seconds from when they won the ball to when they scored.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, that's exactly right. Any longer than that and the opposition are back in place. Mm-hmm. You know, so you're talking about, you know, no surprise that modern football is being analysed down to 13 seconds, but that's the level of accuracy that Julian Nagelsmann is working within here. Now, he's working to a system that's basically saying, right, when we win the ball, we need to be forward, creating a chance, having the ball in the back of the net 13 seconds later. And that means his team needs to know exactly how to do that and where to be in order to do that.
Yeah.
But just, you saw it against Bayern, you know, standing up, being aggressive. They put in so many fouls, but didn't get booked. So they were basically niggly fouls that got in Bayern's faces but weren't punishable offences.
Same thing that Frankfurt did too.
Just, and everything that they did in the first hour, 50 minutes, was exactly what more teams need to do against Bayern Munich.
Well, we were talking about it off air, how ironic that he gave this interview after playing against Mats Hummels, after playing against Xabi Alonso, two players that go to ground probably way too much.
Yeah, I mean, Xabi Alonso probably goes to ground too much because
he's too slow.
But that's not to, you know, when he's in possession, he's one of the best players in the game still. He's able to move the ball very, very quickly. But I think it's when sides put that pressure that Nagelsmann is talking about on him that he has to hurry his game, and that often he is caught out and then he has to react. You know, you've got to remember that in football a lot, and this is why I never rated John Terry, because John Terry was a player who was always making sliding tackles because he was always out of position. It was, oh, John Terry, the great last-ditch tackle. Yeah, well, why was it last-ditch? Because he was out of position. And actually, the greatest defenders in the game are players that are rarely out of position and are rarely slide tackling, which is why I slide tackle all the time, because I'm rubbish.
Cannavaro famously always had his shorts clean.
Exactly. And it's one of those things where, you know, if a player has the intelligence and he's able to implement that. I mean, Boateng doesn't slide as... He slides a, a little bit more than he perhaps should. But it's often because it's not because he's in the wrong place. It's often because he has no other choice.
Yeah.
You know, and there are times as a defender where you're like, okay, now I'm on the back foot. He's pushed me into a corner. He's beat me for pace. I have no other option.
Well, I was thinking of that Hervidus, that well-known Hervidus slide tackle in the Euros.
That was one of the best tackles.
He had to make that tackle.
True,
because if he hadn't made that tackle, then France would have probably gone ahead much earlier than they did.
But you're talking, yeah, absolutely. But there you're talking about the perfect example. There is where you want your defenders, because that's a block. You know, you're like, oh, you're running back in to do that. But that's because I think at the time Germany were caught out on the break and Hervidus is like pelting it back to be in the right position. But when the ball comes in and defenders are out of position, that's where you sort of worry about why they had to make a tackle so early. And I think there were signs when Guardiola was at Bayern as well that he was frustrated with some of his defenders when they would go to ground too easily. Mm-hmm. And, you know,
One thing he changed actually about Jerome Boateng, Boateng said that a few weeks ago, that he was like, all these tackles that you're making, you got to get them out.
Seriously. Because, and it makes a big difference, because it's not just that it's an unnecessary part of the game in terms of, you know, it gives the attacker an advantage and it slows play down. But it also slows play down, as Nagelsmann was saying, for transitional play.
Mm-hmm.
Because it takes you a lot longer if you're making the tackle to get up, have an awareness of where the game is, and then to play the ball on. Whereas if you're going to be standing anywhere and you're going to muscle him off the ball and then play it, that's a lot quicker. And it, you know, maybe talking about 1 or 2 seconds, but in a spell of a transitional counterattack, 2 seconds is the difference between scoring and not scoring.
Yeah. So getting out of John's defensive corner here.
Yeah, let's move on.
One thing I wanted to bring up too is we were just talking about Hasenhüttl and his ability to get the most out of players. But Stefan, I mean, Kerem Demirbay probably was the best player on the field. And what a goal. I mean, you never see Manuel Neuer just looking defenseless in the goal.
It's true.
And you see, I mean, Demirbay has been extremely good. You see that Mark Uth, who's injured now at the beginning of the season. So we also have to give credit to Nagelsmann for getting the best out of his players as well.
Oh, yeah, undoubtedly. I mean, he's obviously set up the system so that players can come in and out of it. It's not really specific to key players, although there are obvious ones like maybe Sandro Wagner, who
really should be in the Germany team. What?
Yeah, sure. And yeah, I think to much of what John has said, he's obviously a coach who puts a huge amount of emphasis on detail. I haven't had the pleasure of interviewing him yet, and I haven't actually even been in the same room as him yet, but just from watching afar, I get the impression he's actually quite a confident man. And I don't just mean like sort of a quiet confidence. He seems to have almost like a swagger about him, I find, actually, which I think is also part of the way why he rubs off the wrong way for a lot of coaches, actually.
Mm-hmm.
It was maybe Ross I was discussing this with when someone says it's almost like they're jealous of, and I thought, well, there could be another side of the story where he's actually just quite cocky as well, and I think maybe that's intentional in the sense that it rubs off on the players, because you've got a Hoffenheim team going toe-to-toe with Bayern Munich.
Mm-hmm.
Tactics spot on, and they obviously knew exactly where to hit Bayern, because they absolutely harassed Xabi Alonso throughout the game, and it seemed to be spot on, but it does. Not just the tactics seems to be notable to me, but it's also the confidence, and I wonder if that's just from the personal touch that he adds to the teams. You know, I mean, sure, it's not like he's just some bookworm who knows his tactics. He seems to be also maybe
putting in the shouting on the touchline that you like so much.
Exactly, yeah, he does. He dresses differently. A Twitter made it quite point. He's like, oh my god, he's so millennial, like the way the clothes he wears and
of
stuff.
Course,
you know?
Yeah.
Because he quite literally is a millennial.
He's a millennial, yeah.
But I think I wonder without ever meeting him, this is just a thought in there, just a theory. I wonder if he has that kind of confidence that Mourinho at least used to have, where, you know, he made players run through brick walls for him almost because maybe not like an alpha male, but like, you know how, like, in the sense that because he was cocky, the players believed in him, you know?
I think that says that he's 29. And he's in charge of a squad with older players. I mean, Sandro Wagner is a notoriously difficult guy to hold down and get playing well. And
a year older than him.
Yeah, doubt here that Sandro Wagner is playing extremely well, right? And there's not even been a whisper of a dispute or an issue in the squad. I totally agree. I think he's very... he's certainly got a confidence. I think it would be very interesting and exciting to be in a room with him and talk to him about, you know, football, because you get the feeling that even though he's very humble, at the same time, I think that's what's endearing about him, because actually he could be very brash And maybe that's where he differs from Mourinho of yesteryear, because he was very brash to begin with.
Yeah.
But there's certainly a sense of, I can imagine, maybe following that line of thought, you know, when Schmidt says to him, well, you think you reinvented football or something, and probably in his head he's probably like, yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
You know?
we only hear one side.
Don't you wish it was you?
Yeah.
You know, like, and obviously he would never say that, but there was probably a moment in his head where it was like, yeah, well, sucks to be you right now, you know? Like, yeah. And not in a bad way, but just in a, well, I'm glad I did my homework, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm sorry you didn't, you know? But I think there's nothing wrong with that, so long as it remains respectful, and that's definitely been the case. He's only ever been polite, and you know.
I wonder if that's something that he maybe picked up off on Tuchel, because I get the impression of Tuchel as well, in the sense that, I mean, he's no bully, he's a very polite man, he can be very discreet when he wants to be, but he also kind of has that kind of steely confidence about him as well. Like, I mean, Tuchel has that kind of stare he gives journalists, you know, when we're watching the pre-match interviews, if they ask the wrong question, he'll just give them that glare, and you're like, I wonder if it's that kind of like, in a moment you can turn around and be like, oh God, I'm absolutely shit scared of this guy now, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, compared
but
to...
if he's done that with journalists, you imagine what kind of control in a positive sense he has in the changing room.
Exactly, but I mean, compared to like maybe Pal Dardai, who I think is a very quiet, almost like adorable guy, you know, he's got a smile about him and you're like...
He's like mates with everyone, who like
yeah,
high-fives
exactly,
everyone.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Maybe that's just because he lives in Berlin and you have to be cool in Berlin, but he seems the complete opposite of Nagelsmann, so just from like a sort of personality point of view, there's maybe more to the man.
Let's move on quickly to Bayern, because this is the second game in front of an international break that they've dropped points. Of course, it came off the back of another exhausting game in the Champions League, a game that they won this time against PSV Eindhoven. But once again, questions are coming up whether this guy is the right man. Is this? I mean, this is just ridiculous expectations, because Pep Guardiola was nearly perfect in the Bundesliga.
I think people probably realise now, and it's quite ironic, I'm sure a lot of Bayern fans will say, I mean, Bayern fans who have been watching Bayern for a long time and who will really appreciate football will have said, well, yeah, they know that Pep Guardiola did some fantastic work, and they will have felt the inevitable wave from the other half of Bayern fans who are now missing him, you know, and it's like, well, yeah, well, what did you think, you know?
No.
He isn't one of the best coaches in the world, or the best coach in the world for a reason, you know? I think, yeah, Ancelotti's come under some stick. I'm still not sure whether I agree with Steph's sideline, you know, the argument, in the sense that he lacks the passion. That's why Bayern aren't necessarily performing on the pitch. I feel like at Bayern Munich, if the manager gives you a set of instructions, I think that's exactly what they needed after the intensity of Guardiola. They needed a calmer figure. I think if he gives you a set of instructions, you know, you're playing for one of the best teams in the world, you have to be able to motivate yourself. And I think different people motivate in a different way. There are certain managers, you know, look at Jurgen Klopp, who's obviously extremely emotional, and he motivates players, and that works for a club like Liverpool. I think Bayern Munich, under Carlo Ancelotti, I think if he came in, he'd be like, right, lads, okay, today we're going to play this way, we're going to win this game, blah, blah, blah. And maybe that's not working as well at the moment, but I don't think that's necessarily on Ancelotti. I think that may be just on an adjustment period for the players, because they've come from such an intense period of time under Guardiola, but...
Well, Boateng even said that, I mean, he acknowledged that, yeah, sure, we're not performing right now, but it's also 10 league games under a new coach. I mean, there's new ideas that come in, there's new... I mean, it's a completely different policy.
Absolutely. Maybe the one criticism of Ancelotti I would have is the 4-3-3 stubbornness. I mean, it's obviously not an effective system for a team...
Although he admitted to
Bayern.
Switching... In game, but
right.
Even then, it was just like,
funny,
I'm going to switch from a 4-3-3 to a 4-4-2. Everybody be shocked, you know? It's like,
I mean,
it's almost like predictable. I mean, you see, like, a guy that does his homework, like Nagelsmann, it's almost not difficult to game plan because he's using the same players in the same way.
I also don't think that 4-4-2 is an effective way for Bayern Munich to set up, but I mean, hey, I'm no football coach, so you know, my knowledge in that sense is minimal, especially when it comes to Bayern. But I think the way that squad is set up, you know, you don't want to always revert to being predictable and play 4-2-3-1, but it was such an effective way to play and maybe that's partly largely down to Guardiola, but the 4-3-3 system I find is very limiting the way that they're playing at the moment. It could be effective, but they have to have a bit more drive out of midfield. And I feel like if the use of the wingers was fantastic of late, you know, having Lewandowski in the middle and having Costa, Coman, Robin, Ribery, whoever it is out wide, makes a big difference.
Noticeably, you left out Thomas Müller.
Yeah, but that's my point. You know,
but
they don't need him in that system,
yeah.
And that's really where Bayern don't need him. But I think at the moment they're trying to play that 4-3-3. And they're not actually, I think they're being very poor in front of goal, actually, of late. They've been pretty bad. in taking their chances and not as effective as we're used to seeing them. In fact, they didn't even score a goal against Hoffenheim. They didn't, technically.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. Hoffenheim did it for them.
Yeah.
And, okay, it's one game. And as I say, I think the use of wide players is an effective way for them to go. So maybe 4-3-3 works in that sense. But I feel like they're trying to do a lot at the moment, too much for a side that are getting used to a new coach. You know, they're trying to accommodate Müller in a system that doesn't really work for him if you've got Lewandowski already on the field. And what do? How do we do it? And if it's not working with the wide players because we're not scoring the chances, they seem to be getting a bit impatient, mm-hmm. you know. And okay, against Hoffenheim, they were just unlucky, really. But I mean, why is the ball falling to Mats Hummels, you know, in the box? Why is he the one hitting the post, mm-hmm. you know? And unfortunately, why is the ball falling to Thomas Müller in the 91st minute? Because he's just not going to score at the moment, you know. And all these questions, all these situations, it's easy to overanalyze and say, oh, Bayern are rubbish at the moment. But I think Steph's question about Ancelotti having some serious points to prove is certainly valid.
You know? Well, you wrote this column for Deutsche Welle. You said that he has basically the three games you brought up, of course, the next two league games, Dortmund and Leverkusen, and the Leipzig game at the end of the year. But, I mean, one could argue also that, I mean, the trip to Rostov would be, and that's not a given either. I mean, you have also have to play Mainz, and maybe Mainz will be able to racket it up a notch.
I feel like I could beat Mainz right now. But
true. But I mean, they're a team that have given Bayern trouble in the past. So how are we supposed to take these next few games? Is this a real trialing period for Ancelotti, or is this just another stretch of their season that they just have to do well?
I think we have to consider the fact that I think what John says is absolutely right in the sense that, first of all, this is a transition period between Pep to Ancelotti, but in the sense that you might give them the benefit of the doubt, I'm not entirely sure I would. I'm not sure that's a good thing. I don't think this squad for the last 3 years has been purpose-built to play high intensity from a coach who screams at them from the touchline. Now they play low intensity, even if they don't mean to. There's no doubt about it. Mm-hmm. Bayern just do not harass teams the way they used to.
Yep.
And they don't have anyone. It's not just Pep they're missing. It's also Matthias Sammer, in my opinion. Both of them just screaming. Sammer's a really intimidating guy, actually.
Yeah.
When they have both those guys screaming at them, and it worked, at least in the league, and they just don't have that now. Now, I'm not blaming Ancelotti for that, because Ancelotti is what Ancelotti is. He always has been that. He always will be that. He's a minimalist coach. He doesn't get in fights, everyone's got a nice thing to say about him, and his handoff approach works when you have a squad that is already built to win things. It works when you have a Real Madrid team that should win the Champions League. It works when you have a Chelsea team that should win the Premier League, and it works when you have an AC Milan team that should win the Serie A. When there's a winning formula already in place, he comes in, he brings in his formations, which, you know, over the last 10-15 years wasn't that revolutionary. I mean, you could play, I mean, 10 years, maybe even 5 years ago, you could play 4-3-3 anywhere and it would work. It worked in Italy, it worked in Spain, worked in England. I'm not sure, like you say, I'm not sure if that works in the Bundesliga. The problem I think Ancelotti has now is that he's came to Bayern Munich thinking, well, this would be a skoosh. This would be just like what I did at Real Madrid and just what I did in London at Chelsea. I'll come in, I'll use my formations, and with 11 of the best players in the world, I'll win what I have to win. Now that might still work in the Champions League. Now I know they've already lost to Atleti, which is probably a really good sign of, or at least a really early test of where Bayern fans might be thinking, right, this is where this guy should be excelling. But if we just focused on the Bundesliga specifically and what I wrote about, they're not doing it at all. And like you say, they're struggling in the formation. He's trying to fit Müller in as Pep did. I think Pep's formation was far more forgiving, in the sense that he played a 4-1-4-1, so Müller could play anywhere across that four. And I think
Müller was playing off of Lewandowski more, and I think that was the biggest thing. I mean, this is a guy that hasn't started the last three Bundesliga games. That's ridiculous, considering that he, I mean, he hasn't
apparently
ever.
Apparently, he's the most expensive player in the Bundesliga according to current market value.
Yeah, and he's also. I mean, he never does that.
No.
I mean, if anything, he's known for being a workhorse. So.
Yeah, but that's the thing that Steph's saying, and I think it's right. You know, if you have Müller off Lewandowski, it's effective. But if you play that way, you can't have two wingers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then you lose. You know, you lose width.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, I kind of curtailed the column by saying Pep Guardiola won 3 league titles at Cantor. And he still had his critics. He left Germany absolutely fed up with the media because they were constantly questioning him, arguably, in my opinion, rightly in a sense, for not winning the Champions League. Now, Ancelotti in May might end up winning the Champions League because he's been so casual in the league. Maybe that's how he does it, because he has a terrible record domestically, and he goes on to win European titles. And what we're seeing right now with Thomas Müller, where he plays him, you know, when he has to, if, unless he absolutely has to, might be, he might intentionally not be playing Müller because he wants to make sure he's fresh in February or May. And if he goes on to win the Champions League, then that's fine.
But is it, just to look at Wolfsburg on the flip side of things, or even use a Pep example, is it excusable then if Bayern don't win the title but win the Champions League?
Well, that's the million-dollar question.
Because
that's
Pep
question.
Always said, or Pep always said, and everybody,
domestic is...
and Rummenigge always used to say, Bundesliga is where is the first part. And Bundesliga, and a lot of the players always used to say, yeah, Champions League. But, you know, I think every player who plays knows that the Champions League is also a little bit of luck. And
you get to the semi-finals, then
you,
and
then
luck.
You can start to say semi-finals, maybe we need to have a chance here. But until you get there, it's difficult. Whereas the Bundesliga, I think there's an expectation now for Bayern, especially with their recent record in the league of just completely dominating, that not winning it would be a huge problem.
Well,
but if they win the Champions League, is it okay? You know, obviously that's the $64 million question. But
if they want to win the Bundesliga, they didn't sign the coach for it.
No.
They might now. Rummenigge might honestly wait to the end of the season and gauge how the fans feel. Because if they end up finishing second to, God, even Leipzig or maybe Dortmund. I mean, this is the crazy thing. Dortmund are only 6 points behind them. This is kind of my final point on Twitter last night. Despite everything that's happened in the Bundesliga this season, Dortmund are only 6 points behind. And that's, I mean, I might be wrong, but they might have been further away in second place at this point last season. They were maybe 8 or 9 points behind by Christmas last year. If they're still sixth come Christmas, but if they're still 6 points behind Bayern and there's two or three teams in between them, I mean, that's a great credit to the league itself. But I just think that, we've got these three games coming up. We've got Dortmund, we've got Leverkusen, and we have Leipzig. Now, Leipzig's obviously a little further away. They're not three consecutive games, but I think those three teams, looking at the way Bayern are playing right now, will fancy their chances. And I think ultimately what all Ancelotti's done so far since he's came in is proved that Bayern are mortal. You know, they can bleed. And that's a huge credit to the likes of Frankfurt, Cologne, and now Hoffenheim, who have all three really well-worked teams. But if they can do it, why can't Dortmund, Leverkusen, and Leipzig? And if Bayern go on to lose 1-2, maybe all three of those games, I don't think they will. But if they do, and come Christmas, they might be behind a team like Leipzig or Dortmund, then old FC Hollywood might rear its head again, and then things might begin to crumble.
Well, you're just talking about last season. This time last season, Bayern had won every single one of their games.
Yeah, they were 10 points ahead of where they are right now.
And Dortmund were 7 points behind.
There we go, spot
so, what crisis?
Last season they were 7 points. They had 7 more points than they did. Or do you mean in terms of Dortmund?
No, I was saying in terms of what you're saying about Dortmund.
Yeah, sorry.
After all of this, it's so crazy because right now,
well, what do you say? I think
Dortmund are 6 points off Bayern, right?
Yeah. And how many points are they?
Well, I think that's the point he's making though, because he's saying that Dortmund are. They have not been the team that started well last season. They started pretty well last season.
Yeah, absolutely. But
right?
Then again, in the same respect, Bayern have not been the team that they were perfect. They were perfect, you know. And I think the point about intensity is a very valid one. And I think Bayern have to really up their game. And I think I'm really proud of the Bundesliga for saying, or for waiting for their moment. You know, like Bayern have dropped, taken their foot off the gas. They've dropped down a gear or two. And Hoffenheim, Cologne, Hertha, Dortmund have all said, hey, all right, you're going to drop down, we're going to push it up. Okay, Dortmund have to go up another level because their expectation demands it. But
which they did over the weekend against Hamburg.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, we could score 5 goals against Hamburg at the moment. Hoffenheim, Hertha and Cologne have been sort of steadily building towards this moment and have said, right, okay, now we're going to go up a gear. And they haven't stalled. And that's what's so impressive about it. I think it makes for an exciting season. I think we need to be more said about this, you know. And that's why I was sort of a bit baffled by Ross's RIP, because this is exciting.
Yeah. This is the most alive the league has been
in years.
3 years at least.
Well, let's get to this question from Graham6895. He says, but we all know that what will happen close up to Christmas and that Bayern will basically gallop ahead in the second half. Are we convinced that that's going to happen?
Well, no, just based on the intensity that they've been
lacking. No, because they've got at least, I don't know how many games they've got left to the end of this. How many games will be what?
7 or 8.
They've got 7 or 8 games, and there's 3 that I can think of off the top of my head, which I mentioned in the column, that they could quite easily lose. So I don't see Bayern. I'd be very surprised if Bayern won the rest of their games this season. And I'd be very surprised if all of the teams below them also dropped off.
Yeah, I mean, look at that. Before Christmas, they've got to go Dortmund away, Leverkusen at home, Mainz away, Wolfsburg at home, Darmstadt away, okay, gimme, then Leipzig at home.
Yeah.
I
mean, that's, other than the Darmstadt game, you're talking about Dortmund, Leverkusen and Mainz. That's all European teams. Wolfsburg, who should be a better team than they are and on paper are a better team. And that's like Mario Gomez returning home to, that would be hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
And then Leipzig. Imagine the drama, the situation there, if they don't pick up, if they don't at least win three or four of those games.
Mm-hmm. All right, so let's get to some of other user questions. Thank you for sending them in. Again, you can send your questions always to @Tribuna Podcast on Twitter. But this is from Joshua R. Duder. He says, is Nuri's stint at Vader, as Vader's brush, short-lived? They face a red-hot Eintracht Frankfurt team next. Does the front office wait until the winter break?
No, I think it would be a bit premature to make another change. I mean, it sounds like Hamburg, you know. I think things didn't work out with Skripnik. They've appointed another youth coach. They gave Skripnik time. I would be surprised if they didn't give Nuri time. Yes, it's a bit of a bad trend that they're on at the moment, but, you know, bear in mind that they have been a bit unlucky and they've come up against teams who are on their upward swing to an extent. It doesn't help that they're playing Frankfurt next as well, obviously,
yeah.
But... again, 10 games in, I would give him a really
time.
And
yeah.
He's still got to work with what is largely a fairly mediocre team. Let's not forget that. A couple of standout players, but some pretty average ones as well.
I mean, I know they lost to Schalke last night, but they still looked 100 times better than they had at the start of the season. They've had some unlucky run fixtures so far, and I think Frankfurt will continue that misfortune. But against a decent Schalke team, I think their penalty was quite lucky, but they could have maybe got one or two genuine ones by the end of the game.
Mm-hmm.
I think as long as they're playing well, I think results here and there this early in the season aren't that big a problem.
Yeah. I mean he is a reserve coach, and I think that, I mean, they have committed him to the rest of the season. I think that leaves the door open for someone else to come in the summer. I don't think they would make a change. I think that would be unwise.
Yeah, and the games are losing right now. They're not expected to win as well.
Yeah, exactly.
So
here's another question from Phil M. Quinn on Twitter. He says, should Hamburg start planning for the second Bundesliga this winter?
Yes.
I don't think any club does. I think
their accountant probably should.
I think that they're going to try to survive. I wouldn't be surprised if they spend another 25 million in the winter transfer window.
Yeah, but I mean, you know... there are a lot more things that they need to sort out. They need to sort out, you know, apparently they're interested.
But are they going
to
do that before the
director?
Yeah.
If they want one of those, then fine. Your bias office has been a problem, but they need to. It goes beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Kuhne investing all this money. You know, now he's having a say. You know, you have to sort out the football people from the business people, and you have to sort out who says what and how much power somebody has, because ultimately it's just a catastrophe at the moment. And you know. Internal disagreements. Apparently, Giroud thinks that they shouldn't be playing with a back three. Gisdol's saying, you know, every player should be able to play with a back three or a back four from the age of, you know, 15, 14.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't help, all of this back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
They have to make some serious decisions. Either they're going to stick with Gisdol and say whether we get relegated or not.
Mm-hmm.
For the stability of the club, we need to make a decision. Or in 5-10 games' time, they're going to sack Gisdol again.
Yeah.
And they're going to pick someone else in. And they have to make the right decision. And I feel like not even they know what that is, to be honest. But they have to plan for it. They really do. And I know it sounds negative, but they haven't won a game in 10 games.
They have scored like 3 goals in the season,
right?
Too.
So, 4.
4, actually, yeah. So those
two goals
scored half of their Bundesliga total going into the game. They scored that against Dortmund.
Obviously you don't want to be negative and you have to be optimistic, but you have to also be sensible. Someone has to be a plan B here. Let's plan for the in-case sense, you know?
Is that Nikolai Müller's first appearance this season?
No, he's played a lot.
Pretty sure he's been playing.
Yeah, because I thought he was quite impressive, actually.
He's probably one of the players that, if they do go down, won't go down with them.
Yeah.
Although Pierre-Michel Lasogo should go down with them and should not come back.
No, he shouldn't come back.
Not a Bundesliga footballer.
Jonathan is not a fan of him.
No. I think
has called him overweight several times.
No, he's probably in better shape than I am.
Every summer he he intentionally takes a picture of himself with his top off.
Yeah, and it's like,
he's not fat.
Yeah, and it's like,
and the guy's absolutely ripped.
Yeah,
but nobody cares because he's slow.
Because he runs like a train, like on the wrong track.
Some people are just slow runners, Jonathan.
Yeah.
Okay. We got this question about the New Germany kits. Jack Grimsby on Twitter said, "What do we think of them?" Real quick.
Yeah, this thing's top. It's nice. It's cool. I buy one. I love chevrons, and the collar is nice.
I've got the green and black striped one, which everyone hates, so I'll buy any Germany top. Easily.
I love the green one they had a few years ago, like the
light green
one. Everyone in the world likes. It's not hard to make a good Germany top.
No,
white
not.
Home.
The black
white
one
green.
Is my favorite, though. I think the black one was
really?
One of my favorite. The one they had in South Africa was really, really nice.
Yeah, I think that's one of my favorites too.
But this one's good.
So let's get into this shout. From the Tribuna section, Stefan, will lead off with you, and we actually have a question to lead this off. Phil M. Quinn, this is his third question from Twitter. He says, will Schalke get back to Europe? And I think he means, they're already in Europe, so I think he means the Champions League, and you've been bullish on them recently.
I think they're doing quite well, actually. I think their league position right now is maybe disguising how quickly they've actually turned things around.
Mm-hmm.
I thought they were very impressive against Werder Bremen. I know I just said Bremen looked good as well. It was a really well fought game from both sides. And I think Weinziel was making the most of what has always been a very strong Schalke team. We saw Schaub come in, who scored two goals, gave away a penalty, which I thought was very unfortunate.
Yeah, it was.
But, you know, it's encouraging for Schalke fans that these young players can come in. I mean, Max Meyer, again, just out of nowhere turns this game on his head. Goretzka seemed a bit clumsy, I thought. But in general, I mean, just to go back to Europe, 100% record in Europe, and they played the German team, whose name I can never remember.
No, it was the Austrian team, Salzburg. No.
The last Europa League game was against the...
Krasnodar.
Oh, you might be right, sorry.
Yeah, we don't know.
Rostov is the
we're
one
not,
you said earlier.
Yeah, we're not...
All these
we're
European
not experts,
teams.
We're not experts on the Russian Premier League, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm quite happy to admit that.
Agreed.
So, but yeah, they looked great against them. I thought they looked very impressive against Werder Bremen in a sense as well. And I think this is just fine. So begin to, get his nails into this side. And I mean, I'm quite happy to put myself on record. I have in the podcast a number of times that this Schalke team should be in the top four at least.
Well, imagine that top four: Bayern, Leipzig, Dortmund, Schalke.
Yeah,
Roger Schmidt's out of a job, isn't he?
Well, you never know.
He might be out of a job.
He says Dortmund's going in. It's 9 games undefeated now, which I don't think people really thought about really at all, because it's mostly been in Europa League, which nobody watches.
Mm-hmm.
They seem to be the only team taking it seriously.
Yeah,
they did this last season as well, actually, because I remember last season thinking that it could be a Dortmund Schalke final, and both teams went out.
Imagine the intensity.
Well, they have a ringer now, which is the Europa League ringer, which is Konoplyanka. So
that's true.
He's their Europa League ringer right now,
and he didn't even play. So I think Weinziel is doing really well to rotate his squad, and all the players are playing well in his system. So if I was a Schalke fan, I'd be very optimistic right now.
Okay, John, what do you want to shout from the Tribuna this week?
Strikers.
Back to strikers.
Defending with Harding mentions strikers. Unbelievable. No, talked about it enough. I've written about it enough. I know Russ has written about it. I know you all agree with me. But anyway,
preaching to the choir now.
For years, Germany's been bereft of striking options. I know that Joachim Löw just named his Germany squad. And Mario Gomez is still in there. As much as I like him, okay. I'm not sure he'll be a realistic option for 2018. It looks like that goal against Darmstadt has sort of turned Gomez around a bit. He scored two in the win against...
Galloping two
yes,
seconds.
He was galloping through the rain. What a hero. So that was impressive. But as I said, I don't think it'll be an option for 2018. So the way that Löw's played, the fact that he's staying as manager, the way that Germany sets up, and what more players like Mario Götze. Mario Götze is slowly getting back to the kind of quality we expect from him. But what kind of player does he want leading the line? You know, based on character, and I think that's the biggest trait for Löw to have in the squad, because the squad balance on character is very important for him. He's never going to pick Sandro Wagner on character, I think. And that's a shame, because based on his play...
Well, let me jump in here, because Max Kruse made the team. And
yeah,
obviously
absolutely.
He is a questionable character.
He is a questionable character, but I think that's one of the things... That's one of the... I'd like to have that back decisions for Löw. I think he got that wrong. Plus, I think maybe Kruse went off the rails a little bit afterwards.
I think Kruse is a character who... whose character was assassinated by the German tabloids.
I also think that that hasn't helped him at all. And he didn't handle it very well.
A lot of propaganda about Cruz's character, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Going back to the
Nutella,
options,
you were talking about Nutella.
Exactly. Sandro Wagner is a perfect player for the system as an option. Obviously, it wouldn't be a starting option, but I think he's definitely an option. But based on character, I don't think he would go. We're just talking about Timo Werner. In 2 years' time, he's going to be, 22 years old? He's got probably a million caps for the under-21s. So how long before...
A million Bundesliga games too.
Yeah, exactly, right? How long before you give him a chance? You know, there are going to be enough friendlies against San Marino in the next... Or qualifiers against them.
Qualifiers against San Marino, yeah.
Give me a break. Against them in the next 2 years for him to be given an option. So he's an option as well. And based on what Steph was saying, I totally agree. He's exactly the type of player that you'd want in that system. And if it's not him... Outside a bet, Maximilian Philipp. He's 22 years old, and I think I'm right in saying he's the leading German goal scorer in the Bundesliga. He's got 5 in 10 for Freiburg. He's already been in the Bundesliga before with Freiburg when they were last time. He's stuck around. He's only 22 years old. I really like him. He's tiny. He fits that kind of system with, you know, movement. He's got a great long shot on him, and he's both-footed.
Yeah.
So, options. Now, obviously, this comes from a cynical man who doesn't believe that Joachim Löw will make any of those decisions, but he has no reason not to.
It's interesting. There's a guy who asks me on Twitter every week. I forgot his name. I'm sorry if he's listening. I forgot his name. But he says, do you still think Mario Götze should play up front for Germany? And I say yes. Okay, cool. See you next week. And he comes back and asks again and asks again. And I'm like, yep. And I do. I still think right now Götze should be. But I think I said to you when we were on shift over the weekend that right now, if the tournament was tomorrow, I'd take Götze on and maybe Sandro Wagner.
Yep.
Just put on the bench and bring on.
I mean, the other option is that he's tried in the past is Andre Hahn, but he's more like a Mario Gomez in the sense that he's like a bull, like big striker, classic number 9. Okay, Hahn's a lot quicker than Gomez, but it's like an old-fashioned option B. You know, the Euros Gomez worked because they actually had a lot of moving parts around him, and Gomez was actually pretty good at being part of that machine. But I feel like in 2 years' time, Gomez is going to be done. Mm-hmm. And they're going to need someone to be fluid.
In 2 years' time, 2 years ago, Gomez was done.
Yeah.
Wait.
Wait.
But I think they need someone fluid for that. And I think there are options. It just depends whether he's bold enough to pick them.
I think Timo Werner on a German team would be very exciting.
It really would.
By the way, if you're listening to Jonathan talk and you want to actually hear what he says, you can probably, there's that half speed function on the podcast. So if you want to actually hear what he says, I suggest slowing it down a little bit. But I'm going to do mine quickly. I think it, because we had another manager sacking, which was Markus Kaczyński at Ingolstadt. I'm going to go out on a limb here and I think that and say that Ingolstadt know exactly what they're doing. I think that they appointed him because it was they only gave him a 2-year contract. They tried him out. He was a second Bundesliga coach that was decently successful with Karlsruhe. Karlsruhe never got promoted, but they were in the playoff place a few times. And I think that giving him a chance was the right move. They moved on from him quickly. They realized he wasn't the right person. And I think that if they bring it, I think John, you mentioned Josh Luque.
Yeah.
They probably knew that there would be a candidate out there like Josh Luque out there, if they wanted to try to stay in the Bundesliga. And I think that may have been the plan going in. And I think that's fine. I think they're Ingolstadt. They're the team that was in the Bundesliga for the first time last year. If they go down, people aren't going to be surprised.
I think Darmstadt and Ingolstadt were the two teams that I think people picked out this season for second season syndrome and said, like, wow, they're going to really struggle. And particularly Ingolstadt without
Paz and Vettel,
you know, it's going to be a real issue. But yeah, Jos Luhukay might not be a bad option. He suffered from all the problems at Stuttgart upstairs. I don't think you'd have that at Ingolstadt. I think he'd have full support. Even if they went down, he's a great manager to bring them back up. He's a very good record of getting sides promoted.
Yeah.
You got to look at the other options, and I sort of doubt whether any of them are exciting enough. You know, Labbadia.
I take Labbadia.
Thomas Schaaf. Amin Fay. I'm spouting these names. Amin Fay.
Would any of these guys go to Ingolstadt? That's the thing, though.
I mean, maybe the older coaches wouldn't, but maybe an Andre Breitenreiter would.
Bruno Labbadia might.
Breitenreiter might. Luhukay, I don't see why he wouldn't. You know,
I look at Ingolstadt and just think they're fighting the tide here.
I think they're going to go down. But then whoever makes the appointment has to have the mindset to say we want a coach that's going to stick around for the second division in the case that we get relegated.
Exactly, but that's not what Labbadia wants. No.
But he's just spouting off names, of course. But I'm just saying that I think that they...
But my point is, I think I've struggled to get a big name because...
But they're English stat.
I think if enough money's put on the table and the guy is the right kind of manager, I mean, yeah, okay, a lot of those names are just spouted, probably want bigger teams, but...
Ingolstadt is very realistic. They knew that Hasenhüttl had a lot of success. They said when Hasenhüttl left that, yeah, we know he's going. I mean, he's obviously a really great coach. That was why we hired them in the first place. We're not surprised that he wants to leave, and we're going to give him an option out. They're a very realistic club. So if they can't recruit a guy like Labbadia, they're not going to get dejected by that fact. I mean, they're going to try to appeal to a guy like Luhuke and saying, yes, we might not have the stuff to stay up, but we have a decent reserve team, we have decent resources, we can build this team up around your image if you want it.
Yeah, and I think Luhuke is the kind of coach that would come in and say, all right, I got 14, 24 games to whatever it is to try and get this team where I want to have it. And if we don't work, then I get more money than most teams in the second division to come back up the next season. And that's not a bad...
That's not a bad job.
Because especially as a manager, in that situation, you're kind of like, I can't lose here. Mm. Either we go down fighting, you know, or we stay up and I'm a hero. Mm-hmm. Or we go down fighting and I get a chance to be a hero next season.
It'll be interesting to see what happens because... unlike what the case was maybe 5 or 6 weeks ago, there aren't many teams in the Bundesliga who are down there with them.
It's important to stress that, exactly. Yeah.
But the point I'm making is that 5 or 6 weeks ago, they were down beside Bremen, Darmstadt, Wolfsburg, Schalke. Now those three teams have kind of got their act together. Now it's just Hamburg. Maybe Augsburg might move down.
I think Darmstadt are going to get
moved down.
That's the reason, like I said at the beginning, that's the reason why they said, Kaczynski, you were great. You were obviously... have some talent because you made Karlsruhe a respectable second division team, but we probably think that you're a second division coach, so we're going to let you go. And we're going to try to bring in a Bundesliga coach to try to help us stay up. And we're going to try to find one that would go down to the second division with us. I think that the way that they're treating this is perfect. I think that they gave Kaczynski 10 games and they said, if you don't give us a win in 10 games, we have every right to move on from you.
I don't think they were approaching it that way. I think maybe they weren't successful in getting someone that they wanted initially, and they had to settle for Kaczynski.
Yeah, sure, that's fine.
But I'm pretty sure they wouldn't have wanted to be in a situation where they had to sack a coach 10 games into a season because...
But I don't think it was a very low-risk move to sign Kaczynski.
Yeah, I mean, given the options at the time... They probably didn't have very many other managers that were interested, but
I mean, ideally they would hold on to Hasenhüttl.
Maybe they're but they were never.
They were never going to, but they know that.
But I think even Ingolstadt have they have ambitions. They don't want to just come up and stick around. They're a bit like a poor man's Leipzig, in the sense that they've been promoted ruthlessly.
True.
And they want to stick around. You know, they don't have the Hasenhüttl anymore, and they don't have a Ralf Rangnick or the kind of backing that Leipzig do. I mean, they're not poor. You know, they have funds, but they need to get back to the foundation, the idea, the image that you talked about, the philosophy. That and they don't have that, and they need to make the right managerial decision together.
Yeah. I think I admire the bravery of any coach that takes that role, because to me it's mission impossible.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. But then I think anybody.
But that's why they're looking for someone that would go down with them.
And maybe there's an under-19 coach.
Is that not what they had though?
Lurking.
In signing a solid second division coach, is that not? Was he not the pull in case of emergency? Is that not him?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think that they were giving a guy that was out of contract a chance to manage in the Bundesliga. I think
they didn't have another option.
And maybe they didn't have another option.
They had to go with him. And I think now they have more options. I can't help but think that Luka is a really good fit there.
Yeah.
I couldn't disagree with that.
All right, well, thanks for sticking us for that Ingolstadt talk.
Yeah. It drags on like their season.
Yeah. We'll try to have some, even though it's an international break, we are going to have an episode. We're going to try another question and answer. We thought that worked pretty well. Thank you for all of you guys for who have been submitting questions.
In case, unless San Marino beat Joe. Is it San Marino they're playing?
Unless
San Marino beat Germany, we might have to talk about
but
that.
But now that's after the U.S. election, so maybe there it'll be signs of the apocalypse before that anyway.
Yeah, the election and San Marino.
But so obviously you can send all your questions in during the week at Tribuna Podcast on Twitter. And of course you can follow Jonathan Harding at JohnBlog66, 2 G's and 2 6's, so you guys can remember. SB Yankovsky, of course, for Stefan, and Davis_Fanopdorp for me. And be sure to also, if you like our podcast, be sure to go to the iTunes store and write a review. That's obviously a great way for us to build our brand. So if you like the stuff that we're doing, just tell us on the iTunes store. We really appreciate all the feedback we've gotten so far, and we would like more of it. So but we'll be back next week. We don't know who's going to be on, but it's always a surprise every week.
We never do.
So
drum roll.
Come back next week for one during the international break, and we hope we can liven up some boring international break for you. All right, see you next week. Bye.